Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is Ringside Chaos, the most passionate pro wrestling podcast in the world today, and quite frankly, the best. Yes, I did say that. I am very confident in myself and in this show. So ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome back the co-founder of the Great Girth Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Trujillo. And Tony, it's an honor to have you back, sir.
Thank you, as always, brother, for having me on, man. I'm excited.
Well, you know, in these kinds of episodes, I need you because AEW Dynasty is something that needs to be covered. And because you watched the whole show, you know, you're needed on this one, bro. You're needed anyway. And I'll tell you that. You're always needed on this show because we love you on this show, brother.
I love being on, man. This is one of my favorite things to do is talk wrestling. So I'm glad I found someone that can share that passion like I do to a degree that's, some may call it pathetic, but I love it. That's my thing, dude. So, no, I did watch it front to back, which is something I have not done in a while. I got to admit, with AEW pay-per-views, it's been kind of hard. I've been zoning out and then returning and then picking up where I left off, whatever. But this time I actually watched it beginning to end. I will say this. It's an update, dude. It's way better than the last pay-per-view we got. Way better. But it still teeters. It still teeters on 3.5 to 4 stars. It was good. Good matches, but man, it was still kind of, there was some that were throwaways. And we'll talk about that down the road, but there was also one match that was killer. So,
I mean, as of late, WWE put a great show with WrestleMania, New Japan with the Windy City Riot, and now AEW with Dynasty. You see, this is when Adam Copeland said it's the best time to be a pro wrestling fan. And pro wrestling needs to be celebrated and appreciated as a whole.
Yes.
100%. See, at the end of the day, this is what we talk about. All these promotions giving us a great show. We don't want a perfect show. We just want an amazing show. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I tell you, you know, based on this match, I mean, several matches got, you know, BR Report graded them an A. And, you know, and honestly, I agree with it. But
it was good. I mean, here's what I will say about it. It's for being like a first-time pay-per-view, it's pretty good because we're used to Revolution and Double or Nothing and all that by now. That they do kind of – the execution's pretty stale. But
right,
with the introduction of newer ones, it's actually getting a little bit better. Like World's End could have been better, sure, but this was a really good kickoff, if you will, because the whole point of it was a new era of AEW.
Right.
Lately from different companies everywhere. It's a new era of this and a new era of that. So it's cool to see what is in store for this new era. There's We'll get to it when we get to it, but there's a nice little reveal that we got that I wasn't too pleased with. But anyway.
Well, the pre-show, I really honestly have nothing to say about it. Do you?
Dude, I don't watch those. I mean, okay, I do when, like, there's the match, which is, like, what, 2 10-minute matches and a whole hour that they have to kill time. I watch them, but I don't really pay attention. I'll sit there, dude, and stare. Like, I will say this, man. Even though I'm a diehard AEW fanboy, I really hate that they're putting good wrestlers on the pre-show. I really don't like that they're putting, like, Jay White and shit on pre-shows, and that doesn't make any sense to me. Or, like, Sammy Guevara, why is he on pre-shows? You know what I mean? Like, they did that to him a while back, and I never really care for the pre-shows. But,
I think we can skip the pre-show. Guevara has basically landed himself in the doghouse a few times. But and everybody just blows that out of proportion. I'm like, okay, yeah, he makes mistakes. He's human.
Yeah, we all make mistakes, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And as far as Sammy Guevara goes, you know, last I heard, he's currently in Europe with his wife and his child. So I'm not sure when we'll see him again. But all I have to say, as far as the pre-show goes, I mean, none of the matches really got a good grade. I mean, except the one of them that got a B- according to Bleacher Report. But the title
that was
Orange Cassidy and Shibata versus Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty.
Yeah, I gotta say I agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean basically the acclaimed versus Bang Bang Gang, basically the Ring of Honor 6-man tag team championship and the AEW World Trios championship basically became unified, and I'm like, okay, I guess that's kind of cool, because not long ago Tony Khan confirmed that it would be happening.
Well, yeah, I was sitting there like, yo, when are we gonna unify all the belts and just make it one big, like, cross promotion? Like, I don't get why we have to have two promotions under the same roof. Honestly, at this point, dude, just dissolve Ring of Honor. They belong to AEW now. But
because there's so much talent, I think they can keep doing two shows. But I'd like to see more talent appear on both, though. I'd like to see some more Ring of Honor talent on AEW and vice versa.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. Instead of doing a Ring of Honor show, keep it as is. But I think it'd be best if they changed the name of it and just got rid of the Ring of Honor logo and all that shit, because I don't really see a difference, man. Like, we're getting off topic, but I just don't see a huge difference in the two. But anyway, yeah, that happened, and that was a stupid decision, but it was cool in the fact that they're being unified, so I won't complain.
Right. Well, first match right here was the AEW Continental Championship. Well, I should mention, like, every title was on the line in this one, and the first one was the AEW Continental Championship. Kazuchika Okada, the current champion, defending against Pac, formerly known as Neville in WWE.
I saw the ending coming to this match. Not going to lie, I was not interested in this match for one reason. I don't care about Pac, man. I just don't.
Really?
I don't find him interesting at all. To me, he's just, I mean, he's a good wrestler for sure. He doesn't have that spark that I'm looking for. And Okada, I love him, but he's one of those wrestlers, man. If you put him with someone like Pac, it's, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I thought that was a pretty decent match. Wouldn't say it was mediocre, but that's at least a C to me. It was all right. Again, man, this is just me, but I really didn't find much interest in this match. Saw the ending coming from a mile away, because there's no fucking way they're going to put the belt on Okada and then make him lose like a bitch to the hero of the story. You know what I mean? Like, that just, and I did confirm one thing, though. I was like, okay, so if Okada wins tonight, for sure the Young Bucks are going to win. That's the way I see it, and that's pretty much what we got. But, again,
yeah,
we'll get to that.
I mean, I knew they would win anyway, but we'll get to that. I like this match. I mean, as far as Pac goes, his post-run after WWE is, I mean, there's been a lot of ups and some downs. I think he's probably been injured a few times, and, of course, what happened 4 years ago when the crap hit the fan.
Yeah.
You know, when he left WWE, I mean, he would work in Japan. He worked in his home country of England. He worked in Europe, so he was working around the US, well, you know, AEW and whatnot. So he was really out there just being himself. And, you know, of course, you know, I love how the crowd chanted, "He's our bastard. He's our bastard."
Yeah, I mean, it was.
He comes out of that villain like, you know, he's a bastard. So.
Well, I'm getting the feeling that
if he calls himself that, y'all, then it's not offensive. If he wants to be known as the bastard, then hey.
That's his mantra.
You know, and you know, super athletic, and you know, it's just sometimes I just have difficulty just seeing him as the baby face because I mean he's a good face, don't get me wrong, but with his character and his ability, his charisma, I think most of the time I'm just invested more on the heel side of him.
Well, and that's my issue with him too, man, is he's in between for me. I'm like, he's either going to be a bad guy or he's just nothing because I don't really see him as a face. I'm always like, dude, he's better off as a bad guy. Leave it that way. But
he's called the bastard. I mean, it doesn't make sense to call a good guy the bastard.
Yeah. And so like them trying to make him a face is really difficult to swallow, but he's doing good for what it's worth because again, there are those wrestlers out there like Steve Austin's, if you will, that good or bad, it doesn't matter. Fans love him. So it don't matter what the outcome is. But with his, it's hard because I'm like, dude, if you're not interesting enough as either, you're not going to make it. You're going to fail. You're going to be stuck in the middle. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening with a lot of these guys is they're getting put in middle positions. But then again, there are some of them where that's just what they're stuck with. Like, what if Pac really was always just better off as a bad guy? That would kind of suck if you wanted to try to be a babyface, right? So, I mean, there's a multitude of reasons for why AEW does what it does. I mean, one of the biggest things is creativity.
Right.
They say that they have their own creativity or whatever, you know, so I don't know how true that is.
Which they do. But I think some of the key moments in this match was, you know, the actual how they were working the match. Pac sold a lot of Okada's offense to the point where it looked as though he was legitimately down. But I feel like the finish, I mean, the way the finish was executed, I liked it. I really did. And again, we all knew Pac wasn't going to win, but do you put another title on Pac? I mean, sure, but you got to build him. I'm not sure exactly what Pac's been up to as of late, but
me either. That's the thing is, I don't know much about him.
I just kind of feel like you just don't see him much anymore.
Well, it's a lot of those guys because here's the thing. This is good and bad. I'm trying to explain this to hardcore indie fans. If you're a fan of like AEW and you like the concept of AEW, which is we're knocking on the forbidden door. If you work here, you can work wherever you want so long as the boss says it's okay. That's cool. You know, I love that because I'm just not one of those guys where this is the destination you must go. But the problem with that is, though, man, is we get guys like Moxley that win the IWGP, you know what I mean? And then they're fucking gone for a while. Like, it's cool that they can do that. I agree. But then it also sucks because they're gone. And you're like, where the fuck are they? And unless you're watching Anthem TV and shit, like, you're not going to really know. So that is the downfall to this forbidden door concept. It is,
and you know, everything has got it's gonna have its pros, it's gonna have its cons, which brings us to our next match, a 6-man tag match, the House of Black versus Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe.
It was a pretty good match. I thought it was great. I mean, I did not like the ending, did not agree with that at all.
Yeah.
But
well, every time Eddie Kingston comes up on the short end, I mean, it bums me out a little bit.
Well, that, and I'm sure you're aware of what's going on with House of Black, right? They all want to go back to WWE. It's been like that for fun.
There's been this drama with Malakai Black, formerly known as Aleister Black. Years or so ago, we thought that he was out of AEW, but that turned out to be false. And I got to take responsibility.
Yeah, he's still there.
I put an episode on the show.
Yeah, he's still there, but they all they want to go. So the way I look at it is, well, they may try their best, but because I know that information, to me, they're checked out.
Right.
So I'm like, why even bother building them up? But maybe, I mean, there's probably more to the story, dude. That's probably just rumors online and they're doing just fine. But because I know that
online, and a lot of them end up being false, but
most
it makes
them,
sense, though, because two of those guys are former WWE guys. I mean, you know, Murphy, formerly known as Buddy Murphy. And as far as Brody King, I'm not sure if Brody King, I'm not sure about him.
I don't know for sure, but you had three guys that were ex-WWE guys in that ring. And I personally think they blew the roof off. I've talked to some people already that weren't impressed with this match. Here's the thing that people need to understand, though, is you have an old-ass man in there named Edge. Mark is pushing it, too. He's getting there.
Yeah, and then he's pushing 40, and Eddie Kingston's already in his 40s.
Right. I was going to say these guys are old. And I don't know how old Malakai Black is, but I'm pretty sure he's definitely in his late 30s by now. Because he's been around
for... I believe he's... But Kingston and Briscoe are fine. I mean, Kingston's still pushing it. I mean, we all know Kingston and his love and passion for this business. I mean, Kingston strikes me as the guy he would say, I'm going to die in this ring.
Well, I like Kingston because he's the kind of guy that doesn't give a shit about what people say about him. Because the most common argument about him is he's fat, he's old, he's out of shape. But most of the people that say that are the same people, in their mind, the perfect wrestler is a Triple H or something like that. I'm like, not always, dude. Look at Kevin Owens. He's a big boy, and he knows how to fly. Like,
I mean, Eddie Kingston.
That's why
I
don't like that, but I love
Eddie
Kingston.
Might not be the chiseled, you know, guy that everybody likes to see. I mean, he's a tough son of a
bitch. He's a tough dude, yeah. He's a good wrestler.
Eddie Kingston is a legitimate tough guy, tremendous worker, great wrestling ability, legendary mic skills. Eddie Kingston is great to me. He doesn't need to be this athlete with the six pack and the big muscles. He's perfect the way he is. You see, and like, honestly, it's just stupid that people want to judge him in these stupid ways. I mean, obviously it hates me because Eddie Kingston's my hero. So, yeah. I mean, I mean, I'm telling you, this dude is terrific. I mean, that's right there. He's able to do well in Japan. He's able to do well in Ring of Honor, in AEW. You know, he's one of those guys. It's not that he doesn't deserve to go to WWE. It's the opposite. WWE just doesn't deserve him. I'm sorry, but if he goes to WWE, he can't be Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, and it's too late now, man. They're going to look at it as he's way
too old.
He doesn't
even need to go there anyway. He does not need
that's,
to.
That's what I like about guys like Eddie Kingston, dude, is they're proof that you don't need to go to WWE.
No.
But, of course, the argument on the other end is, well, WWE is where you become a star. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but some of us aren't interested in our wrestlers becoming Hollywood movie stars. Some of us are interested in watching them master their craft over time. So
Eddie Kingston is
that argument's kind of invalid.
Right? I mean, Eddie Kingston, again, the story, 18 freaking years on the independent circuit. 18 years.
Yeah.
Almost quit wrestling, too. Thank God AEW brought him in.
Oh, yeah, because his story is kind of a sad one. It's cool they got – I mean, my only complaint with him in AEW is just that they don't feature him more. I wish they would put him in more, but we see him like once every now and then. But again, he's a guy that's he's wrestling over in New Japan. He's everywhere. That's kind of one of the faults of Forbidden Door is you may not see your star for a while. So
right,
it sucks when they do it to the big names though. Like I will say this, Moxley winning the champion, that's cool. I respect that. But that's one of your top guys. Why would you make him win that? Why not have like Wardlow win it? Go build up a big image of him as a world champion, bring him back. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not really a big Wardlow fan, but he's
got
something.
Wouldn't it be nice to see Eddie Kingston versus Moxley for the IWGP world title? In Japan, or seeing Eddie Kingston versus the new AEW world champion Swerve Strickland? Dude.
Right.
And we'll get to that, but yeah, see, I think we spent, you know, see, again, Eddie Kingston's my guy, so I think I spent too much time, but
It was a good match, though. All
the match, the match was good. I just think the wrong team won. I mean, that triple spear. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool to see. But the ending was kind of like a bit.
And Briscoe with that senton off of the apron, man.
There were a lot of endings actually to Dynasty that I wasn't like impressed with or happy with, but it kind of paid off in the end because we got good matches out of it. So. But anyway, remind me, what was the next match?
Well, the next match was Willow Nightingale versus Julia Hart for the TBS title. And actually, believe it or not, I've watched Willow Nightingale at an independent event, I think 3 years ago. At least I'm pretty sure she was there. And Willow Nightingale is a brilliant worker.
Well, she can wrestle. I think it's just that she's... her character is stupid. That's what it is. It's too much like Bailey with the free hugs and shit. Like, it's very much that. But she's a good ring, like, in-ring performer. And I'm going to be honest with you. I was shocked that she won. I didn't think they were going to let her have it. She's earned it, in my opinion. And it was a pretty good match for... was what they had to work with, because it was a much shorter match than the rest. It was... I thought it was fine. Honestly, I thought that was definitely, like, at least... at the very least, like, a fucking B-. It was a pretty damn good match. The ending, again, it shocked me. I didn't think that was coming. But at the same time, it was like, oh, good. Because Julia Hart, I will say, has made a name for herself now that she's not with the Varsity Blondes anymore. But...
so I'm glad she goes from that to developing a dark heel character.
Yeah, and to being, like, you know, one of the staples of AEW, because she's got a pretty damn big title, if you ask me. But
right, I mean, something
it was
to
time for
Alexa
her to drop
Bliss back in 2021.
Right. It was time for her to drop it, though, man. She had it for quite some time.
Right. And, you know, with Willow Nightingale, I mean, she's like, you know, she works in Japan, too. I think, you know, last year she had that program with Mercedes Moné. And that match, I forget which title it was, but it was a title in Japan, and she beat Moné in the final. So they're working a program to kind of, you know, to keep that going. So obviously that means that we're eventually going to see a match between Willow Nightingale and Mercedes Moné, and that's where Moné could have her heel turn. I mean, I just can't see Willow Nightingale turn heel. I mean, if it was Nightingale turning heel instead of Moné, I mean, okay, fine. We were, you know, we were fooled. Well, I wouldn't say we were fooled, but, you know, we were caught off guard, but that happens. And I honestly, a lot of times I enjoy it. But if I'm being realistic, I would imagine Monet's turning heel.
Well, most likely. And it feels like a lot of people aren't happy with AEW's representation of her. Because, man, there were a lot of people booing her. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that just don't like her. That's the thing I've noticed, which it sucks because I'm like, dude, Sasha Banks was arguably as big as Becky Lynch. I was shocked that WWE dropped the ball on that. And then you go online and there's all these fucking idiots that are like, oh, she's terrible anyway, and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but you're sitting there like, ooh, Rhea Ripley. You know, like, kind of the same person when you really think about it. But they brought her out to signify that we're getting a match at Double or Nothing, which was a stupid way to do it. That's what killed it for me, is the ending. Mercedes coming out, cool, I get it. But the whole solidifying, hey, this is where we're going with this, that could have waited for Dynamite, in my opinion. But right, you got to have star power in because they're trying to get those numbers up. So this one was a B-. I don't have much to say about it, other than I really did think for a split second that Statlander was going to turn on Nightingale, just because they had her in one center of the ring and then they had fucking Stokely in the other, and they looked at her like they were going to fuck her up, and then they just ran to her and embraced her. So I was like, that was a weird... that was a weird way of saying congratulations. I think there's something there. So I think that, and this is a little off topic, but I think that what's going to happen is Statlander is going to turn on Willow at some point. And
very, very, very likely will happen.
It could be that we...
I mean, I just can't see Moné turning heel and then Statlander turning heel and joining Moné.
No,
I just
what's going
to
happen?
I just don't see a duo. I mean, no disrespect to either of them. I just don't see how it would work. An alliance between Moné and Statlander. I just don't see it.
Well, it's not going to be an alliance. I think what's going to happen is they'll have that match at Double or Nothing. Right as Willow has got the fucking upper arm, Statlander's going to come out and turn on her, in which we'll get a triple threat match at the next pay-per-view, most likely, or at the next AEW show. I think that's what's going to happen. I don't think there will be an alliance. I think it's going to just be Moné is clearly there for the star power. You know, strength in numbers. They want it to look cool, but it's really going to just be about Statlander and Nightingale. But I could be wrong too. We could get a Mercedes Moné like later down the road, who is champion. Right, you know, I just don't see them giving it to her right away to begin with. It could be though. It could be this was their way of saying Willow needs to at least win the champion, so we can say she did it. It's on her record. Now pass it along to the bigger star. I mean, I hate when they do that, but it's a possibility. I kind of thought they were going to do that with Edge, and they haven't yet. I'm shocked. But anyway, that was okay, though.
It was, yeah. You know, and again, Willow Nightingale is a tremendous tremendous performer, but I would hope that in the future her character, I would hope that there's a character change, and I'm sure that when the time is right, it'll happen. So then we get to the AEW International Championship, Kyle O'Reilly versus Roderick Strong.
So this match actually got a lot of recognition. It was a pretty long match, too, and I will say that. Like, towards the end, I was starting to feel the fire from it, but it was a slow burn, man. I'm not going to lie. This really was, like, a hard match to sit through because I'm interested in Kyle O'Reilly's little character change that he's going through. It's much more seductive than what he was doing. Because when he was doing his little spiel with Adam Cole and them, I just didn't care for him. I knew he came from WWE. I knew he was part of the Undisputed, whatever
the
Undisputed they're called.
Era. It was Adam Cole, Roddy Strong, and Finn Balor, I believe.
Right. And so, you know,
I gotta stop saying Roddy Strong. It's Roderick Strong, but sometimes I just can't help it. So I apologize to everybody, including you, well, Mr. Strong.
It's hard, though, man, because, yeah, while I like his character change, I really didn't care to see this match, and I'm not the biggest Roderick Strong fan either, but he's interested me. I'm not going to lie to you, dude. He's caught my attention with this whole Adam thing when he was screaming Adam's name and he was just, like, implemented into that story. So, I mean, he's caught my attention. Same with Kyle O'Reilly, but this was a match that it was a slow burn, man. But for what it's worth, for what they had to work with, it's definitely within the realm of, like, a B-, maybe even a C. I don't know. That's just my opinion on it. It was a good match, but it was such a slow burn, dude. Ending was
Well, you're very, very passionate and knowledgeable in wrestling like you. You know, giving these grades, I mean, it's very hard to impress these very big wrestling critics and fans like us. I mean, maybe, yeah, but see, Roderick Strong, I think one of my favorite moments of in his career, I think in 2010 when he was with Ring of Honor, when he beat Tyler Black, who's now Seth Rollins, he beat him for the Ring of Honor world title. Mark Braverman, who's been on the show many times, I believe he was there for that show. So Roderick Strong's just been around for so long. Now, I think the highlight of this was after the match when Adam Cole came out. Adam Cole revealed something, and you know what that is, right?
The fact that he's walking. But here's the thing, though: we keep getting these conflicting reports, though, that he's not even close to being ready. And then he's walking, he's standing, and you're like, well, what the fuck are we doing? And they're clearly hinting at them turning on Wardlow. So we'll see what happens there. The ending was, I'm not going to lie, I did not see that coming. I really thought Kyle O'Reilly was going to win this one because of the way they were building it in the package. But Strong did just win this belt, if I'm not mistaken, like, what, a month or two ago? So it would be kind of fucked
I mean,
up to take it away from him.
They really got to build it.
He needs to have some sort of.
I mean, you want to give Strong you want to give him a realistic length with the title. And if Kyle O'Reilly is going to a full scale war with the Undisputed Kingdom, I mean, they got to build him up. If it's one man, you know, going against a stable like that, so you know, of course, you know, Tavern and Bennett, who are, you know, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, and I would imagine soon when Dr. Britt Baker comes back, it wouldn't surprise me if she joined the stable.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going with it. I mean, I honestly think, realistically, Roderick's run will probably be like 6 to 8 months. That's what I'm thinking. Because if they're running with this Undisputed Kingdom thing, that's probably, it sounds like it would fit. It would be a good fit to have one of them that's at least champion. I don't see Adam Cole winning a champion anytime soon, unless he tricks the world and somehow takes from Swerve. But, you know, again, we'll get to that. But this match, yeah, I'd say anywhere in the realm of like a B minus and closer to a C, because it took a while to get into that. That's what bothered me. But moving on.
To be honest, if they are planning to put a belt on Cole, it would probably make sense if it was the Ring of Honor world title. Because if you have one of his two of his guys are the Ring of Honor world tag team champions, then you might as well have Cole be the Ring of Honor world champions. And you have both. And then again, you would ask, well, are they going to appear more in AEW programming or Ring of Honor? I mean, probably both. I mean, if they're powerful, then probably both. But that would mean, but then again, people would say, well, then that means if Roderick Strong is still with the stable, then he's going to have to be champion too. So that would mean that Wardlow could, we saw a little sign, between Cole and Wardlow, so that could suggest that Wardlow could be on his way out.
Well, and you can tell that the way they set it up, Wardlow knew what was up, too. Like, you could tell he was, the role he's playing is he doesn't want to be there now. And he's kind of out for himself, not them.
Right.
And I think that they see him as a failure because he didn't capture the world title. So at some point, we're going to see a collision between him and Cole or him and the Kingdom. You know, it's coming. I don't know when, but it's definitely coming. That's, in my opinion, if Adam Cole is clear to compete soon, that would be a good starting point, is have him face Wardlow. But
right.
Then again, who the fuck wins? It's like, I don't know. You don't really want Cole losing his first match back. So we'll see.
Because when we're talking about, you know, the current Ring of Honor champion, Briscoe, recently became champion. So,
yep.
I mean, we'll see how things go. But, you know, still, I don't expect, excuse me, I don't expect Mark Briscoe to be the Ring of Honor world champion for a short amount of time. But, you know, you never know. But I still say, I mean, Adam Cole in the future, if the Undisputed Kingdom is to be one of the biggest, to be like the most powerful stable in the company, then you might as well have Adam Cole champion if he's the leader. So
yeah,
since he is the leader, then they got it. He's got to have something. But now we get to Hook versus Chris Jericho, the FTW Championship. Okay, yeah. That's
fucking
obviously,
stupid,
everybody's sick of Jericho. I mean, there was the chance, go home, Jericho. Please
retire.
Well,
here's the thing, dude. He's doing matches that make no sense. Like, I get it. His character is to convince you that he's the best there is, and he's doing great at that. The problem is, though, matches with Hook for the FTW champion, like, what the fuck are we doing? And then him winning, that was like, I did not see that coming. And I was kind of irritated with a lot of fans, so I was like, God, you guys are shitting on Jericho. He's worth more than this. But,
I mean, okay. You see, a lot of people, because of this drama involving Jericho about this, whatever this thing was recently, we briefly spoke about it, but because there was, we talked about it, it would be, this whole thing wouldn't even move on at all. So, you know, it dropped. I mean, this whole thing about a non-disclosure agreement, you remember that? We talked about it.
Yeah,
Jericho is obviously not the same guy that he was way back then. I mean, the dude's 53 years old, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Of course he can't move
down.
Or he'll be what he was before, but I still think he still has good matches. You know, he's still very, very important to the pro wrestling business. He can teach and mentor young talent. He can be a coach and do a lot of things for wrestling. Now, his time as a performer, I'm not sure how much time he has left, but now I think in this match, I wouldn't have expected him to win the title. He turned heel in this match, obviously.
Yeah.
But the fact that Hook kicked out at two Judas effects, and then, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, right now I'm feeling that Hook is going to become champion again. They're just kind of building to where Hook loses the title, but then gets it back. I mean, I think they're going to try to get Hook over. I don't know. But
that's the plan. This is purely for Hook, and they looked at it as who's the best person to pick to make him look big. And that's fine, but making Jericho win it and then putting Jericho in a fucking, basically a no DQ match, he's old, man. Like, he can't be doing that stuff anymore because it's going to be a bad result. Like, I'm not shitting on him. He's my favorite wrestler of all time personally, but
same.
AEW is misusing him, basically. They're misusing him, and he's kind of taking the shit end of the I mean, he's getting fucked because of it, and now people are shitting on him for various reasons, and it makes people hate him more and more, and he's really just trying to build this other guy up. They're just not doing it right. That's the problem.
Honest, they're shitting on him because they're jealous, because of everything Jericho has accomplished in wrestling with his band. You know, he's written books. You know, Jericho overall is a major success.
Yeah, he's a success.
That's
what a lot of it is. A lot of these people that don't like him or Flairs, they're young guys. They're people our age or younger that either didn't grow up watching wrestling, or they're kind of stuck in that side of the room that we like to poke fun at.
They just had enough of them, or they just had enough. I mean,
they're just entitled.
I mean, Jericho. Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, as far as putting the world title on Jericho again, I mean, some people would say, Alex, don't say that. I'm like, okay, well, I doubt that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But still, when people say that Jericho doesn't have a place in the business anymore, Jericho's of no value, here's the deal. Shut the fuck up. That's
right, like,
pathetic.
Okay. See, this would have made sense if, like, hypothetically, he had a beef with Hook, and Hook was the AEW world champion, and he takes it from Hook, and then they build up that Hook has a rematch at, like, All In Wembley Stadium, and then Jericho loses it. Like, that makes sense to give him a champion, which is, it sounds like that's what they're going to do with Hook, but I'm like, dude, why'd you guys pick the FTW champion? Is it because Hook had it? Like, was it because it was relevant enough? But, I mean, I like Hook, dude. I really do. I just think he was, A, the wrong person to work with Jericho. There's no chemistry there. They suck in the ring together, both of them. But had they have done this a different way, like, what if it was, like, Jericho beat Samoa Joe, and he had, like, an ongoing beef with Swerve, and then Swerve's like, you know what, dude, fuck this. You have what I want. I'm coming for you at whatever. And then Jericho holds the title for less than 3 weeks and loses it to Swerve. Like, that makes sense, passing the torch. Like, that, building someone up, that makes sense. But doing it with Hook and the FTW champion is where I have a problem. Because I like Hook, but, dude, if you're going to branch out with him, don't make him wrestle Jericho. Do something like they were doing with Wardlow or something. Like, have him wrestle the big dudes. Because I know it's not necessarily believable, but, I mean, did you find, anyone listening, did you find the Jericho and Hook match believable in comparison to Hook and Samoa Joe? I didn't, and people bitched about that match too, but at least that one had some entertainment in it. This one was bad, man. It was like a bad nightmare from beginning to end, and I was glad it fucking ended, but I was pissed. This was easily, I hate saying this too, but this was easily the worst fucking match in my opinion. This one was just god awful. I'm giving this one a straight ass F, dude. There's no excuse for that shit.
Because you and I, we love Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've always said it. You see, as an adult, I mean, there's been so many wrestling fans I've looked up to. I mean, Eddie Kingston, obviously, because his promos have helped me be a better speaker as a podcaster. I mean, same thing with Jericho. I mean, I always say Jericho is the guy that basically taught me how to stand up to bullies with his promos. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it is, but his promos taught me how to stand up to bullies. So So that's one reason why Jericho is one of my heroes. But But when you put these two wrestlers and there's just no chemistry, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like Jericho's just doing, you know, whatever just because – I mean, I don't know.
I feel like he's just doing what he's told to do because he's a company man, which is what you're supposed to do as a veteran. Yeah, company man. Jericho's not doing anything wrong. It's that he's had the fucking booker, the person that made this match, did something wrong. Con. That's the person dude, that's the person that should be getting the brunt end of it, not Hook and Jericho, but – anyway, next match.
But, you know, we still love Jericho. I still think he's a great wrestler. And, you know what? And honestly, for those people just like that, let's be honest. Jericho is in your head, and he's living rent-free. All right. I mean, now we get to the AEW Women's World Championship, Thunder Rosa versus Timeless Toni Storm.
This actually was a pretty good match. This one is definitely in, like, the B-plus range because while I care for neither person – I wanted just to see, like, how this would go. Because I had an epiphany before the match happened. I was like, there's no way that Thunder Rosa's winning this. Like, there's no fucking way. Because
that's what hurts me, because I love Thunder Rosa.
Well, the reason I figured it out is I was like, didn't they just have, what's her name, the Virtuosa or whatever, in a beef that wasn't really settled? They had, like, one match or whatever. And then they were still hinting at that. And then all these other factors, you know, with the... what's her name? That's her little friend.
Mariah May. And you're talking about, I think at first we were talking about Deonna Purrazzo.
Yeah. So like they had all these factors that were kind of plot holes in what they were doing. So I was like, dude, that's not over with yet. We know that. And I just don't see Toni Storm losing it because right now, as much as I can't stand her, she's arguably the best women's champion they have currently.
I mean, her character. I love her. I love her character. The time. I mean,
well, she's made it
so many times. I do miss her rock star character. But the Timeless character is pretty. It's pretty unique.
Yeah, it's unique. That's why it's like. I think that's why she's so good at what she does. Because, like I said, I'm not a fan of her. But you can't sit here and say that she's a terrible representation of the women's division. I mean, she must be doing something right because they gave her the belt. So. I mean, I just didn't see them.
The character, too. I mean, from what I understand, Tony Khan came up with, you know, had a lot to do with coming up with that character. You know, there's a lot of questions I would love to ask Toni personally. Like, you know how she does, she puts her hands, you know, on her chest like that and does that? I'm really curious, you know, how that come about. But
I bet a lot of it is just her with her Hollywood glam, the 20s and 30s Hollywood girl. They were always like that. So I kind of figured that might be what it is. I will say this. It's annoying. But
it's necessary.
It works.
It's necessary. It works. It's necessary.
Yeah. It was a good match, though.
And the way she carries herself with that character, I mean, I would say to Toni personally, it's as if you're possessed by the spirits of the of actresses from way back then.
Well, yeah,
that Hollywood is long gone, but there was so much notoriety in those days in Hollywood, too.
Yeah, you see her doing that, and you pretty much see like a Marilyn Monroe or somebody that reminds you of that time frame. So, I mean, she's doing good at it. And her in-ring ability is pretty good, too, when she's actually wrestling. Because the problem is she falls into that same category that a lot of the bad guys fall under, which is any means necessary, and that's stupid because they win with the dumbest exchanges or they trick the opponent in the stupidest ways, and that's what she does. Like, she runs a lot, and I'm like, damn it. I like when they, like, make them so bad that they fucking put their money where their mouth is. Like, I can't – this is totally off topic, but it's a good example. I can't stand Roman Reigns, dude. The one time I ever had respect for that motherfucker was when he won clean to John Cena. I was like, thank you. Not happy with the results, but thank you. Like, if you're going to make him this big, bad dude, no outside interference. He needs to do it on his own.
Exactly.
So that was the one time I was blown away. But anyway.
But
– yeah, I mean, obviously she had some help in this one, but
– but, you know, okay. You see, look – I'm always praising a lot of female wrestlers that I consider heroes. You know, Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, Anna Jay, I've praised a lot of female wrestlers, you know, from AEW, Ring of Honor, you know, from everywhere, you know, to even WWE, because to me, women's wrestling matters, okay? Women's pro wrestling is amazing, okay? Women can main event too, so... You know, and honestly, let's be honest, women can work great matches with male wrestlers as well, okay? If it's booked properly, it can be great. I mean, you know, I'll never forget, I'm sure I've told the story, when Bully Ray said in an interview, imagine Bully Ray versus Tessa Blanchard. Hey, I would love that. So, or, I don't know if you're familiar with this wrestler, Masha Slamovich, her versus Jon Moxley, I would love that. Dude, give me Masha Slamovich versus Eddie Kingston.
Right.
Oh, boy. So... Yeah, anyway, but as far as Thunder Rosa goes, I mean, let's be honest, they're going to have to put the title back on her one way or the other because they got to make up for what happened before. So,
yeah,
but
she's going to eventually.
Before they can think of Toni Storm dropping the belt, there's got to be some tension starting between her and Mariah May, and I love that Mariah May usually is like portraying Toni Storm's old character. I kind of thought that was pretty funny. So,
right.
It's probably going to be a while, but Thunder Rosa needs to be fully built back up before they can think of putting the belt on her. But
yeah, I agree.
Thunder Rosa is one of my heroes, tremendous wrestler, tremendous character, tremendous knowledge and passion for the business. Hey, Thunder Rosa is a wrestling goddess. And it was a great match. I am bummed that my hero, Thunder Rosa, did not come up on the winning end, but you know what? I'm still part of the Thunder Rosa Army, baby. Always have and always will be. But major kudos to both Toni and the Thunder Rosa for a great match. You see, that right there is what I say. You see, women can make great matches too. Because I'll be honest, people have I've been teased for being an advocate and supporter of women's wrestling. People just say, you just like seeing pretty girls fight, Alex. I'm like...
Well, my thing is, man, I'm stuck in another time. I prefer when they were doing bra and panty matches. So, like,
see,
you know,
I'm the other way now. I feel like it was sacrilege of them.
Oh yeah, because they were just using them as
sacrilege.
They were just using them as sex symbols. I think the reason I enjoy it though,
and I'll be honest, it's disgusting, man. It's disgusting. As a 14-year-old, yeah, obviously I liked it when I was 14.
Yeah, I was gonna say I loved it.
As an adult, I mean, I'm disgusted.
My only problem right now is, like, as much as I find the women's division interesting, I am that guy that's like, man, they're so hard to, like, sit through, though, because it depends on the match. Like, I do like when they get a little rowdy and they involve, like, chairs and ladders. That's pretty cool. But
Britt Baker, I'm telling you, remember that shirt with Britt Baker bleeding. That's a cool shirt. I mean, that's a shirt I would love to have, but if I wear it out in public, yeah, it's obviously gonna. Well, you know, I mean, Britt Baker did put there was a shirt with her with that black guy. I mean, yeah, that's sort of a lot of controversy, but anyway, but you know, women's wrestling is a huge part of the business today. And, you know, as I said, women's wrestling is important and it matters. All right, well, Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson.
This wasn't the match that stole the show, in my opinion. Like, this wasn't the one I wanted to see out of all of them. And I wasn't happy with the ending, but I knew it was coming. I like Will Ospreay a lot. I think he's probably the greatest wrestler alive right now, but I'm more of a Bryan Danielson guy, though, so I was kind of hoping he would win. But I knew it was going to be a Will Ospreay thing because, I mean, what better way to build up Ospreay than have him face Danielson? So we knew that was coming, but it still sucked to see. It was a good match, though. I actually liked that it was long because I'm that guy that I love when they're long and they're that good. And that was one of those. That was a match where every couple seconds they were trying to pin each other, tap each other out, or do their worst. And I don't know if you'd seen in it, but there's parts, man, where they're fighting dirty. Like, they're really punching each other and shit. Like, when the ref had to kind of get in the way, like, it was a real match. We'll just put it that way. But that was easily the match of the night. That's definitely an A-plus match. I'm not going to call it Will Ospreay's best match, but it's in the running. It's got to be in the top three. That was it was a phenomenal match, dude. It was Danielson's, in my opinion, if that's his last match, then hell yeah, that was a good match. But I think there's more in the tank. I know he's kind of numbered in terms of like how far he can go. And if you watch the end of that, it looks like he was legitimately injured. But
I think he was. I mean, I don't know if it's a work or not, but no, he did look legitimately hurt.
Yeah. And it was,
and, you know, and Bryan Danielson, see, much like Chris Jericho, Bryan Danielson, you know, is coaching, teaching and mentoring other wrestlers and, you know, like that. So, see, Bryan Danielson, I mean, to me, he doesn't need to win because to me, the fact that he put Will Ospreay over and they both had a great match,
right.
Bryan Danielson is still a winner.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, he is. 100%.
You can tell in that match, Bryan Danielson was coaching Will Ospreay.
Well, yeah, and if you look at it.
That Bret Hart did in the 90s with younger talent. I mean, you see a lot of veteran wrestlers do that. I mean, Undertaker's done it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Triple H has done it too. You could tell Bryan Danielson was coaching him.
Yeah, he was pushing him to his limit, and that brought out the best in both of them.
There you go.
That's
see,
why Bryan, I like it.
Yeah, pushing him to his limit. That's why that's probably why we saw the real legitimate hits. It's just So now I am worried about. I mean, as far as Danielson goes, I mean, yeah, it's worried because the injury history with, you know, the concussions, the neck injuries, and everything, man.
Yeah,
so,
we'll see. That could be his last match, but we don't know. I mean, could also be that he's out.
That doesn't mean that he's done in wrestling. He could still, you know, he could just work backstage, you know, train. You know, if he can't actually work in the ring like a match, then it's fine because
at this point,
what does he have left to prove? He doesn't need to be world champion.
No, he doesn't. I know a lot of people want him to be. But
if they put him in the picture from the challenge for the belt. Okay, cool. I mean, I would love to see him challenge Tristan and him put a great match with Swerve, just like Samoa. You see, Samoa Joe, I'm getting ahead. Samoa Joe, you can tell he was basically teaching. He was coaching Swerve. You see, this is what I love about pro wrestling. We see these company guys doing what's best for everybody.
Yeah.
We're giving the fans what they want. I mean, it's for everybody, even the fan base, because we're all in it together. We are
pretty
all
much,
in
man.
It together. So
I don't have much to say about that match, man. I mean, Danielson and
Ospreay,
it was just good.
I want to talk to Bryan Danielson face to face, extend my hand, and thank him so much for everything that he's done so far, what he's doing now, and what he'll be doing in the future. Same thing with Will Ospreay. Same thing with Jericho. Same thing with Samoa Joe, Swerve. You name Eddie Kingston, it's going to be more than a handshake. This guy means a lot to me. So it's. But, yeah, you see, this is what I love about, especially in the beauty of wrestling, like AEW, where they produce the great matches. You see the veteran basically coach and lead the way for the guy that he's putting over.
Honestly, man, if there was a wrestler I could shake hands with, I wouldn't shake his hand, I'd hug him. What's that trans person's name, Nyla?
Nyla Rose, yeah.
I would hug him just like in a whisper in his ear, you're still a man. But the, other than that, that's pretty much it. But, no, that was a good match. That's why I'm like, hey, I don't have much to say about it, because it was all around perfection to me. All I bitched about was the ending, but, again, I saw it coming a mile away. So that one was, like I said, that's the one that stole the show for me. I almost checked out, but had to see what happened next with Joe and Swerve, and it was pretty good. Didn't disappoint. I thought that was easily an A match as well. Not as good as the one we were on, but we're getting to that one.
And, guys, that's Tony's opinion of that whole thing with Nyla. It's not, you know, not part of the Ringside Chaos program. I mean, that's just Tony being Tony. But, yeah, because the whole thing with the Oklahoma Wrestling or the Athletic Commission. You know.
Yeah. But, anyway, moving on to the main event. So, I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of knew Swerve was going to win just because...
Well, we missed out on FTR versus the Young Bucks.
Oh, shit, you're right. That was a fun... So, I don't know how I feel about that match, actually. It was a good match, but not too pleased with the ending.
Well, I mean, seems to me that you weren't happy about Jack Perry.
Well, that was the thing, man, is Jack Perry, I was looking at it like... Great, he's back. So here's the thing. I have not been paying attention. Well, I've been paying attention to him since he left AEW. And I've heard he's doing pretty good for himself. But I never liked him because he was just Jungle Boy to me. And I harbor some hate towards him because, in my opinion, he got CM Punk fired. If he would have just kept his mouth fucking shut and like respected a fucking veteran that was trying to talk him down of doing something stupid. But whatever, dude. Anyway, it was shocking. It was surprising. I was actually one of the few that didn't think that was coming. Apparently, everybody else did, all those anti-fucking AEW folks, yet that's all they talk about. But I didn't see it coming, dude, and it did, and I was like, shit, that was pretty impressive. I was mad as hell, though. And I was mad as shit that the Bucks won. I was like, God damn it, dude, why? Because here's the thing. I get why people hate them, but see, I like them. I think that they're a very good... duo. I think that they're definitely up there with, you know, on the list of who is the greatest tag team of all time. But they're not the greatest tag team of all time because they beat the team that is, in my opinion. And I also just don't like that you have your EVPs winning champions again. I'm like, dude, this is what most people are irritated about. They're getting sick of the bosses winning the gold. And you know what? I don't know why they made that decision. It's probably for a story. Clearly, that's what happened with Jack Perry, so there's more to it. I'm pretty sure we're going to get another FTR and Young Bucks down the road, but it was a good match. It's not fair to say that... I mean, I can't say that it sucked, because it didn't. It was fucking awesome, man. There were some spots where... I can't remember which one of them was it, but it was either Matthew or Nick, one of them. Dude, he hit his head, the back of his head, like, twice. And then he was just seeing fucking circles. But, like, you know, they made it work, dude. There were perfect table shots. There were some awesome ladder shots and really good teamwork. And, you know, you had your typical let's throw one guy out and then let's beat up this one. Typically, Cash gets or Dax gets thrown out and they fuck up Cash. Typical. But I'd say it was definitely like a B+, man. That was a really good match. It has some issues that I'm not a fan of. That's all.
Well, going to this one, the record. Was 2-1 and FTR led 2-1. Yep. And I mean, obviously now that it's 2-2, I mean, that means obviously we're the next time we see him won't be the last time. I mean, FTR, the Young Bucks.
That'll be an ongoing thing.
Very likely going to be for years and years and years and years to come.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if one team inducts the other one into a certain Hall of Fame and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. But
the Young Bucks and FTR is... There's tremendous chemistry. The matches are always great. And I think that's twice now that I think each time the Young Bucks have won, they've taken the titles.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
At least it's something like that.
But, I mean, at least, you know, at the very least I can say, hey, you know what, congrats on being the 3-time AEW World Champions. But, again, it's like you're the EVP, man. That's like... To me, that's the equivalent of being the head of the kitchen and say in who gets what food, and then you get all the good food and they get the shitty food. And like, but whatever, you know, you can't expect a person that ran that business to not have their fair cut. So, I mean, if I'm running a motherfucking business, I want to be world champion at least once. So I get where they're like, yeah, we clearly win. But again, there's probably more to it, man. This is part of a bigger story. And no, I don't see them holding on to those titles for very long. This is going to be a small run. I've got that feeling. Could be long because we're getting this whole new EVP thing, but I don't see it happening, man. This is for a story. It's a plot device. I don't know what it is, but it's for a bigger story.
If it's to keep the war going between the Young Bucks and FTR, then it wouldn't surprise me to see, like, you know, throughout the rest of this year, see both teams trade the titles back and forth.
Well, wouldn't it be cool a few pay-per-views from now if we see Okada still the champion, Bucks are still champion, and we get rematches. Kingston gets his belt back on the same night as FTR getting their belts back. That would be kind of cool to see. But
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? Absolutely.
Yeah. I would imagine Jack Perry's now part of the Elite since he helped the Young Bucks.
Yep.
Oh, and Ricky Lekowicz, the founder of Paint Train Pipe On Productions, was actually originally going to be joining us, but unfortunately he didn't get to watch and didn't have a good day. But, I'll be honest, the listeners here love him, so that's why I wanted Ricky here so bad. But, you know, Ricky did actually kind of tell me, I mean, we'll never see Jack Perry on AEW programming again. So now I'm kind of like, spoke too soon, buddy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd say it's definitely like at least a B+. Man, that was a fucking phenomenal match. I enjoyed it. I have my little gripes, but yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, so it's always good. I mean, again, it's always good to see. It's always good to see it like that. So, mm-hmm. You know. I mean, this has been a thing that's been going on for like 4 years, ever since FTR arrived at All Elite Wrestling, and you know, and the way Jack Perry just comes, you know, of course Jack Perry wears a Sting mask. I mean,
yeah,
nice
little. I mean,
of course, there was CM Punk chants in this one as well.
It's sad, but CM Punk is still famous in AEW.
I mean, he's famous in wrestling everywhere. And only that, I mean, they were even chanting, people were chanting, please be careful.
Yeah, I mean, you know how it goes. Those two are always going to, I mean, I'm pretty sure at some point in history, I don't know when, but maybe we might actually see a CM Punk and Jack Perry match. We'll see. I mean, I kind of doubt it, but it's possible. It's just that Punk's getting up there in age, so we need to hurry that up. In other words, well, Jack Perry needs to get
and
fired.
WWE needs to kind of like join in on the party, working with other promotions, like build partnerships with New Japan, AEW, and you know.
Right. Sounds like that's what they're gonna try to do.
WWE needs to join that party, and they gotta get rid of this PG BS.
Yeah, dude, that's what's killing it.
Right. But so now we get to the main event.
It's a very good match. Easily an A.
Okay. If anybody out there says that Swerve doesn't deserve this, here's the deal. You can go fuck yourself.
I won't say he doesn't deserve it. However, I'm not a Swerve Strickland fan at all. I don't see the hype. I don't get it. But he's a good in-ring performer because he had me on the edge of my seat. I was like, oh, shit, he's going to win. And then same thing with Joe. I was like, oh, shit, here comes Joe. I'm clearly a Samoa Joe fanboy, but I really don't like that he's champion, dude. That's... So that was the problem with this match going into it. I was like, I don't care for Swerve. I don't really like that Samoa Joe is champion. I want him to lose it because, to me, Samoa Joe is the guy that has done it all. He doesn't need a world champion. So, I mean, it's cool to say that because he's the only wrestler in history that held the AEW world champion, the WWE champion, the fucking – or no, not the WWE champion. The
NXT title. The NXT title.
Yeah. And the fucking TNA champion and some other, like, he's the only wrestler that's held all these big coveted belts. So it's like, that's cool to see. But yeah, I wanted him to lose, dude, because I was not a fan of him being champion. But I don't like Swerve that much, so I'm like, I guess we can go either way. But it was fucking good. It was a really good match, man. There were some punches being thrown in there, dude, that were like life altering in a sense. I was like,
Samoa Joe, just like Brian Danielson. I mean, hey, Brian Danielson and Samoa Joe go back a long way. So
yeah, well, that's what Samoa Joe was doing, was he was building up somebody else, which was That's perfect. That's how you do it. Because like I said, I don't want him as champion because his role should be trying to build these guys up and make them the next big Samoa Joe or better. You know what I mean? Like, that was what Bret Hart always wanted to do. And I understand why people get mad at him, but at the same time, dude, I feel it's better if you have a veteran that wants to build the future, not leech off of it. But I also have that, like, that respect your veterans, don't fucking shit on them, which is what most fans do, and some of these younger wrestlers do. They think that they have earned it all, and they don't have to listen to the older dudes, and that's just not how I would do it. But anyway, phenomenal match, man. It was a really good match. No, it wasn't the best one. Like I said, the Ospreay and Danielson was the match of the night. Worst match for sure was Hook and Jericho. That was just fucking stupid.
But yeah, absolutely.
But Swerve and Joe was a good ending. I think everybody got what they wanted, if you ask me, because a lot of people are Team Swerve. There's so many people that like this guy, so I'm like, you know, if they don't let him win, they could really kick themselves in the head. But looks like they did the right thing because, yeah, in my opinion, he's pretty much earned it. I mean, you can't argue with the buildup, you know what I mean? Like, people love to hate LA Knight, dude, but I love him because I came on board when he was being billed as LA Knight in SmackDown, and I had no idea who the fuck he was before that. I had to go watch all his old tapes. But because of that buildup and that random, like, just fucking huge momentum he got, just like Swerve, I took interest. So you can't argue people aren't taking interest in Swerve. They're all chanting his name, dude. They're screaming at the top of their lungs. I mean, when he won, dude, people were in tears and shit. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, it was a pretty good pay-per-view all around. I mean, to me, it was definitely worth the money because those bitches cost money, dude. Those were like $50. So
right.
It's, you know, not.
And the whole thing with Swerve, you know, whose house? Swerve's house. I mean, it's over. The fans love it. You know, and honestly, Swerve turning face, at first I wasn't in favor of it because I didn't think it would work, but look at it.
Yeah, working. I was going to say, it's doing pretty good because my introduction to him was with Keith Lee and all that. And
Swerve,
I wasn't.
Swerve in Our Glory.
Yeah, dude.
Great name. Yeah, I love that name, Swerve in Our Glory.
But it was like, it was weird, man. It was a weird duo. I liked him, but I really, if I'm going to be honest, man, I really kind of latched on to Keith Lee more than I did Swerve. But then when Swerve left and turned on him and shit, then I was like, okay, perfect. Now we have something. And Swerve was a good bad guy because he's one of those guys where if a wrestler makes you hate them enough, they're doing their job. And that's what I was really sick of hearing about him. I was tired of seeing him all the time, but he's grown quite a bit because now he's a babyface, even though he clearly acts like the bad guy still. But that's kind of the position you want to be in because, I mean, look at it like this. How far were they really going to go with Samoa Joe? Who has he not wrestled? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure the list goes on, but again, man, big dude that doesn't need it. I would argue the same about Adam Cole. I really don't think he needs a belt. He's not quite a veteran yet, but it's a pretty big name.
I would disagree. I would say he's been wrestling for a long time.
No, he's a big name, but it's just, I just don't think he needs a belt. I mean, I will say this. Clearly, he's never won the world title in WWE. He won the NXT champion.
Right.
I think it would be fitting if he won the AEW world champion at least once, you know, to at least say he did it. I just don't think he really needs a big run, but then again, I'm different when I view some of these guys. When they're so big, man, when their names are just being screamed, I look at them, I'm like, you don't really need that belt. I mean, I guess it depends. Like, Undertaker doesn't need a belt. He's right. Not needed a belt for, like, 30 years. But there's wrestlers like that. Like, you know, I mean, Brock Lesnar, again, I'm like, dude, you do not need a belt. You've done it all. You're a big name. You're a big draw. You can do just fine without it. But there's some that they're in need of it, man. Swerve Strickland, I'd say, is one that was in need of it because while I may not be a fan of him, he's worked his ass off to get where he's at. And especially because he was someone that was in WWE that people just call a WWE reject. And it's sad because you see the momentum that he's gained in AEW and how far he's gone and how successful he is. And you still have people that are just like, oh, basically he couldn't make it in WWE.
I mean, WWE just didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, WWE, in my opinion, dude, most of the time they just don't know what to do with talent around the world. Because WWE is its own little world. And, like, they make the rules for their own world, and that's cool, whatever. Like, if you want to make movies and shit, then, yeah, go to WWE. But if you want to experience the wrestling world and go all around, then, yeah, you would go to all these other promotions. So I'd say Swerve has more than earned it. But
absolutely. Like I said, you can't say that he didn't earn it. I mean, that he doesn't deserve this. He does deserve this, and he's worked hard for it. The match was great. I mean, the finish as well. You know, and you know what? Samoa Joe just crawling out of the ring and walking back up the ramp. I mean, he was giving Swerve all the glory in the spotlight.
Yep, pretty much.
See, big show of respect right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to do it. Because I'm pretty sure that there are people that didn't want Swerve to win and all that, but it was just his time. And it's really cool to see when you got a guy that's willing to see that and not be selfish, because there's wrestlers in this world, Hulk Hogan, who are like very stuck in their own way and don't want to build up other guys. And I love when Samoa Joe or like a Roman Reigns or whoever does that by passing the torch rather than fucking holding on to it and just going into business for themselves. I mean, I defend that though. I'm getting off topic. But basically, I defend going out of your way to go into business for yourself, because as a wrestler, that's kind of what you need to do. But in my opinion, if you're going to take from the community, you need to give back. So it's cool to see Samoa Joes and shit in the world doing that for Swerve. I mean, I will say this. I'm interested to see what happens on Wednesday, see where we go from there. But for now, I got to go see what's going on Raw.
Right. I mean, hey, who knows? Something big could be happening. But I would definitely say this show was great. I mean, seeing a bunch of highlights and everything. Now, I guess people want to know. Obviously, we saw that Jinder Mahal is no longer with WWE.
Yeah.
See, at first, I thought about doing an episode about that, but I'm like,
I don't know much about
it. I can't do it with Mr. Braverman, because Mr. Braverman, you know, has buried Jinder Mahal a lot of times. So, and I'm just one of those guys. Like, Jinder Mahal, you know, he's worked for the company for so long. You know, he did everything the company asked him to do. You know, it's a shame that how he was treated. It really is.
I mean, they put
the belt on him. I wish that he would have been booked better as champion, but, you know, I'm just sick and tired of people saying that Jinder Mahal can't wrestle, and that, you know, I'm sick of it. It's not true. He's a great worker. And I may be the biggest dumbass for saying that. No, Jinder Mahal is a good worker.
I remember when he was champion, yeah. Like, I remember watching him a pay-per-view, because this was right around the time that I started watching wrestling again, which was like 2017, maybe 2016 or whatever. There was a pay-per-view between him and Randy Orton in the Punjabi prison match or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And all I could think was, like, Jinder Mahal, isn't that motherfucker that was, like, one of Muhammad Hassan's, like, henchmen or some shit back in the day?
No. It wasn't. He was actually part of 3MB. See,
oh, okay.
Jinder Mahal, I think his first run with the company was from 2009 to 2014. He was actually in the match that actually crowned the first NXT champion with Seth Rollins.
Okay.
And then kind of became made his debut on the main roster in 2011. Quickly became a jobber, and then was part of 3MB, got released, and then came back. Obviously had that physique, and first he was jobbing at first, but then he all of a sudden shocks the world, becomes the number one contender, and wins the championship, and then he holds the belt for like 6 months, and then kind of seems to go back to what he was before. You know, they just bounced him around. I mean, his return at NXT, I would hope that was his fresh start. And, you know, earlier this year, that whole thing with Tony Khan, and then he kind of goes viral and then challenges Seth for the title. Yeah. So basically, when I saw the tweets, he said, I quit, Maharaja out. I thought it was merely work. But then 30 minutes later, it starts to flood that he's been released from the company. He's obviously got a 90-day compete clause.
Yeah, exactly.
So as we close out, where could he go next? Well, good question. I mean, AEW comes to mind, Impact, TNA Wrestling, Japan. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if he does what Nick Nemeth is doing, like basically go as a freelancer, work in Japan, appear at Ring of Honor, whatever. I mean, we'll see how things go. I mean,
yeah.
I just only hope that at this point in his at his life in his career that Jinder Mahal can have a respectful run in the profession of wrestling. I mean, I'll be honest, he deserves better. I mean,
well,
again, people are laughing their butts off at me right now.
I just don't know much about him. Otherwise, I'm like, he probably should start soon if he started in 09, because his time is ticking then for him, unfortunately.
Right. So, yeah, but as far as everything else goes, I mean, it was a great show, and, you know, that's what I love to see as a fan of pro wrestling. I want to see WWE produce great shows. I want to see Ring of Honor. You know, y'all know us. I want wrestling to succeed.
Yeah, exactly.
I want all the promotions to succeed. I want more of it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I want more. I don't want just one promotion. I want more.
Exactly. So as we close it out, Tony, I wanted to tell the folks about the Great Grit podcast.
Yes, if you're looking for a podcast that has remarks like the one I made earlier, or you're just maybe looking for a good time, something to shut your mind off and listen to two fat dudes talk about a bunch of bullshit, that would be the Great Girth Podcast. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as YouTube. And that's going to be at the Great Girth Podcast. Same with Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. We're pretty much everywhere. We're even on Threads. The greatgirthpodcast.com is still under construction. So your best bet of reaching us, if you have a question or comment, or maybe you want to collaborate, if you will, you can find us mostly on Instagram. That's where we'll respond to you. Otherwise, all Alex, right, man, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And as always, Ringside Chaos can be found anywhere you get your podcast. So hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, so we know for sure that you're not going to be missing out on any exciting upcoming content. Thank you all very, very much. Have a good one, and God bless.
Thanks again, brother. See you on the next one.
See you on the next one.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.